In a moment, we're going to Pennsylvania to explore some very strange things beyond the Seventh Gate. Stick around and find out what we're talking about next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to read the whole title of this book so you get a great understanding of what we're talking about tonight. Beyond the Seventh Gate, exploring Toad Road, the Seven Gates of Hell, and other strangeness in York, Lancaster, and Adams counties. Timothy Renner with us. Timothy, of course, is an author, artist, a musician as well. He has written articles for several publications, including Morbid Curiosity, Weird USA, Weird Pennsylvania. And illustrations have appeared in comics, magazine, and books. And here he is with his first book, Beyond the Seventh Gate. Hey, Timothy, welcome.
Thank you. How you doing?
Good. I'm looking forward to this. How about you?
Oh, very much. I realized today as I was thinking about this interview that I've been listening to Coast for over half my life.
And here you are. You're on it now.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
That is cool. Hey, tell me, what kind of musician are you?
I play folk music.
Oh, good for you. The old, like, Simon and Garfunkel stuff?
Yeah, kind of. A lot of traditional music and kind of 60s folk like that, yeah.
Good for you. And you play the instruments. I envy that. That's the one thing I wish I would have mastered when I was younger, but I never did. Oh, well. I tried.
It's never too late.
Tried. Beyond the Seventh Gate. This is your first book, and you did a great job with this, with some incredible stories that are out there. First of all, you got to tell me, how did a musician get interested in this?
Well, my interest in this kind of stuff started before I was ever a musician. It started when I was really young, and in the 1970s, it was a great time to grow up and be interested in this stuff. I was born, I think, 3 years after the Patterson-Gimlin film,
uh-huh.
And In Search Of came on when I was a kid, and that just fired my interest. I would watch that every week. And I found a series of books in a local library called Man, Myth, and Magic. They were kind of an encyclopedia and just of strange things. And I would get a volume out every week. And seems like from that point, I was hooked.
Oh, and hooked indeed. And you happened to, now, did you live in this area? Is that how you keyed in on the central Pennsylvania area?
I moved to the area in my 20s. I grew up in Maryland.
Ah, okay. When did you start hearing about all these stories and these legends?
Well, because I was interested in this kind of thing, as soon as I moved here, I really started asking around, you know, what are the ghost stories, what are the legends, and I was told about them, you know, specifically, the main things I was told about was the Seven Gates of Hell and Toad Road, but they were not linked when I first moved to the area. They were separate legends.
And there must be, there's almost what, almost a dozen, at least a dozen different stories and myths of different things out there.
Oh, yeah. When I moved here, the Seven Gates of Hell were associated with two other areas, and there weren't physical gates at either location. The way I was told it worked was that you would drive or walk in a certain route, and at either location, they were associated with a certain cemetery and a place called Hex Hollow. And depending on this route, each circuit, you would open up a kind of symbolic gate, and things would get stranger and more horrible with each gate. And supposedly, no one ever made it back from the seventh gate. That's what I originally heard. And Toad Road, the only thing I had heard about that originally was from my wife, who was then my girlfriend,
uh-huh.
And she had gone to day camp at a camp that was the kind of on a road that paralleled Toad Road. Toad Road's a closed road now. It was closed after Hurricane Agnes in 1970.
Okay, so it was a real road.
It was a real road at one point. It was a graded stone road. I don't think it ever got to be paved. But it was closed in, like I said, 1972. So she went to day camp there in the early 80s. And the only thing she remembered was another kid at the camp or a counselor, I forget which, pointed over. The camp she went to was on a road that paralleled Toad Road across the creek from it. And the kid or the counselor pointed to the Toad Road and said, "That's Toad Road over there. Don't look behind you on Toad Road." And that became very important. that phrase haunted me, and I kind of put it in the back of my head, and it was just such a strange and eerie phrase that I always thought there must be something to that. And little did I know it would play a huge part in the book.
What would happen to people who were on this road?
Well, the original stories were very vague, and I didn't hear much of anything.
By the way, the picture of the road that you have with the snow and stuff, that's eerie all by itself.
Yeah, that's what it looks like now. It's all overgrown. It's not much more than a path now.
And you can tell there's a gate across it. It's blocked, right?
It is, yes.
Okay. Do people sneak back there in the summer when those trees all bloom?
I think people sneak back there. People claim to walk it. I hiked it, and I honestly don't believe people have gotten very far. It's pretty overgrown. It is private property, so anybody listening, you shouldn't go back there. I had permission.
Now, are the Seventh Gate stories tied into Toad Road?
Well, they weren't originally. Like I said, they were originally associated with Hex Hollow and the local cemetery, Prospect Hill, but they became tied in with Toad Road. In the late 1990s, I was a member of an email group that was kind of legend seekers and ghost stories and so forth for Pennsylvania and Maryland, I believe. And at that time, someone just out of nowhere said, oh, I found the true story of Toad Road. And they created, I don't know if it was them or someone told them this, but this story came out about an insane asylum that was supposedly back there that burned.
Oh, jeez.
And the victims were the townsfolk were afraid of the patients, and they dispatched, they killed them in the woods, and some of them died in the fire and so forth. It sounded very just unbelievable to me. My love for traditional music and traditional stories, a lot of the details get changed over time, but there's usually some grain of truth there. So I really like to find the truth,
yeah,
or get as close to the truth as I can behind any of these legends. So that originally, when I heard this insane asylum story, I just, no, this can't be. So I went, my father-in-law does genealogy, and he has old maps of the area that date back to the early 1800s, possibly before. And I was just started pouring through these maps and looking at the area, and there's never any building back there other than what's called a seasonal dwelling, which is a very tiny building. It's probably a hunting cabin is probably what it was. And even that's gone now. But there was never an insane asylum back there. In fact, York County's never had a dedicated building for an insane asylum or mental health building. They went to the almshouse.
Well, what a great legend.
Yes, it stuck too. I mean, that became kind of the story. And even when I kind of confronted the people in the email list and said, no, there was never an insane asylum back there. They just changed the story and said, oh, no, it was this mad doctor who had, kept patients at his house.
These are stories that like American Horror Story would love to do and illustrate. Because these are scary, spooky, but they could be true.
Well, in this case, that wasn't the true story of Toad Road. Became stranger as I started looking into it. I didn't want to rain on anybody's parade. They do make great stories, but they just weren't true. But witnesses do report strange stuff back there. They don't. To me, they didn't seem to have anything to do with ghosts, though. They report screams and things stalking them in the woods, things peeking from behind trees, the sound of babies crying. And if you know anything about Bigfoot and cryptids, these kind of match up with Bigfoot behavior.
Tim, did you have a chance to talk to local law enforcement and authorities about these places?
I actually filed a FO, Freedom of Information, request, and it was never answered.
Nothing.
So
you had to. So you picked up these stories from people who lived in the area. How did you get them?
I asked everyone I knew if they knew anything about that. I did a lot of newspaper research and some other web searching as far as missing people and so forth.
Let's start with the seven gates of hell, and we'll make our way through this as we weave through your book, Beyond the Seventh Gate. Seven gates of hell, exactly now, what are they?
Well, there is no seven gates. It's just a story. Some people say that there are seven physical gates that were supposed to keep people away from the ruins of the insane asylum that isn't there.
Okay.
Other people say they're symbols, you know, that they kind of psychic gates, I guess. That as you go further on Toad Road, you sort of pass through these markers. Some people say the fallen trees across the path count as gates. There's a lot of people jump through a lot of hoops in order to try to keep the seven gates.
Now, well, to me, when you hear the word seven gates of hell, it sounds like an entrance to, of course, hell, right?
Yes, and that was, in all the stories, each gate you passed through was supposed to, things were supposed to get scarier and spookier and more horrible.
Get you closer to hell, probably.
Yeah, and no one was to return from the seventh gate.
So all of that is just a myth?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it came from, there was a very popular sermon for traveling preachers in mid-1900s that was called The Seven Gates of Hell, and several preachers would use this sermon. I believe it just kind of jumped from, and this is a guess, but I think it just kind of jumped from this sermon into, you know, local legend and became a sort of myth.
Hit us with some of your good stories about this myth. What do you have?
Well, the myth, to me, it was the real story that I was very interested in. I wanted to find the truth, or as close to the truth as I could get. So the only thing I know about the myths have to do with just, as I said, the gates leading to
right.
The horrible things.
And you're not a skeptic, right? So you didn't go out there to try to kill the story. You just wanted to find out what it was.
Right, yeah, and I believe my witnesses, when they tell me they've seen something or they've heard something, I'm not there to say they didn't hear what they heard.
Right.
But I think if someone goes out, if you go out to an area and the story you've heard is that there was a burning insane asylum and you hear a scream, you're going to say, oh, I heard a ghost scream.
Well, you know, that's what I do on this program, Tim. You know, if somebody calls during our open lines and they say, look, I saw Bigfoot, it walked right across the street. I mean, I'm not going to belittle them or put them down or say, no, you did not, or you're nuts, and hang up on them. I mean, that's not the intent here. So I applaud you for going out there to try to get to the truth without shooting everybody down.
Oh, no. I think most people, they've got nothing to gain from doing these reports and potentially a lot to lose. So, and I think most adults can tell the difference between a bear and a bipedal
right.
Walking creature.
Now, for the myth, though, to have been established, you know, the seven gates of hell, some things could have happened, I would guess, to give people the impression that there's something very strange in this area going on. Do you think that's what was happening?
I think possibly. I think in terms of the insane asylum, there was a local building. It was called a sanatorium, but this is the early 1900s. Any place of medical rest was called a sanatorium. It could have been a hospital. This happened to be a nursing home. And this, it wasn't on Toad Road. It was in a nearby town. And that did burn down. So I think somehow that got woven into the story.
Now let's move over to Toad Road, which, as we know, is the real deal.
I believe so, yes.
What were some of the legends, and what did some of the witnesses say about Toad Road?
Well, you hear again and again, the most common thing is what they say, a woman screaming. But people report being stalked by something they couldn't see. It would walk just out of sight in the brush, or it would pace them. It would be to the side. Things peeking from trees.
All on this road.
Yeah, again and again. In the general area, mostly on the road itself, but yeah.
Do you know, Tim, if any you know, media outlets, TV, any radio, newspaper people, did they ever go out there to investigate this?
every now and then you'll see a story pop up in the local paper, and they tend to focus on the insane asylum story, I think, probably because it makes a good, you know, it's a good hook. But to my knowledge, nobody ever really did the history and the legwork on it.
Did anybody ever try to record these screams or anything like that? Boy, that would have been great.
Yeah, people have gone back there and recorded some. I wasn't able to get, people told me they recorded. I wasn't able to get the recording. I've gone out and recorded. I didn't get any screams, but I did get some, what sounds like bipedal walking one night.
Did people, were there reports of missing people out there or anything like that?
There are. There's a very recent case of a woman went missing. She wasn't on Toad Road, but she was very nearby. And that was, I think, 2013.
And disappeared?
She just disappeared.
Yeah, we've got David Politis who comes on the program, and he has been investigating people who disappear, primarily in our state parks, in federal parks. But this would be right down his alley, you know, where these...
Yes, I'm very familiar with David Politis' work, and it was some of the things I found. That's why I started looking for missing people, because I found some very strange things. If you remember that phrase my wife said, don't look behind you.
Yeah, now what did that mean?
Well, that led me to, I was just looking for connections with Pennsylvania folklore to see if there was anything even older I could find. And I found a creature in Pennsylvania folklore called the Hide Behind.
The Hide Behind. It's a creature called the Hide Behind?
Yes.
All right. What is this thing?
It was one of the most feared creatures. When the Europeans came here, the Indians said, and I'm sure they had their own name for it, but I'm guessing the English translation is the Hide Behind. They said, beware of the Hide Behind. It was this feared creature from the forest that would stalk people. And they said, and you'll recognize this from Pilates' work, they said, only the bravest should be the last in line.
Ah, okay.
The last in line
gets grabbed.
Yeah, and they said only the bravest could be relied on to never look behind them when they were walking through the forest. Because they look behind, they'd see the Hide Behind. Apparently, they'd get, you know, scared or go into shock, and they get taken.
Has anybody described what it looks like?
No.
So we don't know if it's just some sick person or what, a creature or a Bigfoot. Who knows?
Right. I mean, there's some, it certainly acts like a Bigfoot creature in the way that it stalks and it peeks from the trees and so forth, according to the legends. But that, the last in line thing, that's immediately rang bells with me from the Missing 411 books. So that's when I started to look for missing people.
How many people have been reported missing along Toad Road?
Well, until I get the Freedom of Information Act request, I don't know. But I know there's been at least one woman missing recently I was able to find, and two hunters have been found dead in the area.
Oh, geez.
One was presumed to have fallen from his tree stand. The other was just found dead, and then I believe this was in the 1920s.
That's weird.
And he had discharged his shotgun two times, and they just found him dead there.
In like he was shooting at something.
Like he was shooting at something.
All right, stay with us, Tim. We're going to come back. Tim Renner with us. Timothy Renner, his book, of course, is called Beyond the Seventh Gate. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back and talk more about these strange stories out there in York, Lancaster, Adams counties in Pennsylvania. We're going to open up the phone lines later on tonight, too, with your own stories. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Timothy Renner with us, his book, Behind the Seventh Gate. Where do you get the book, Tim? Where's it available?
Amazon's probably the easiest place.
Best place for you. Super. And we're talking about Toad Road and the hide-behind creature, which you think, if it's real, could be like a Bigfoot, right?
I think so. Besides the stories that people are telling, which confirm with, you know, Bigfoot behavior, I did find a news story of a man who got attacked by what he called a green-haired monster in 1973. He was sent to the hospital. And I originally thought, well, that sounds outrageous, green hair. But if you dig a little bit into Bigfoot sightings, it's not that unusual for people to report them having moss or leaves or something caked into the hair to where they appear green.
Algae, who knows?
Exactly, yeah.
Who knows? Tell us a little bit about that case. What exactly happened?
The details are scant on it. The newspaper just reported that this man was attacked in the area. It was right near Toad Road. He was not on Toad Road itself, but he was
pretty close to it.
Yeah, and sent to the hospital with scratches on his face. And it said the police went out and they found no monster. That's all they reported. I did try to contact the fellow. He has no internet presence. He has I couldn't get a phone number for him.
Jeez.
And it looks like he moves kind of frequently, so I wasn't sure if he wanted to be contacted.
A recluse, no doubt, huh?
Perhaps. I didn't know if it would be a good idea to just knock on the guy's door and say, "Do you want to talk about a green-haired monster?"
And you went, for the things you started investigating, Tim, you went beyond Toad Road, didn't you?
I did. It really fired up my interest, just finding so much back there. And my interest, I do enjoy ghost stories a lot, but I really like, it, in terms of paranormal, I like things that leave footprints. I like the cryptid things. So when I found that back there, I started looking for other things in the area, both other strange places and, you know, records of cryptids.
What was the most surprising thing you found?
Just the sheer number of encounters. When I started digging, I just found just a crazy amount of Bigfoot encounters in the area. For one, was the most shocking. Dating back to 1858, I found stories of Bigfoot encounters in the area. I didn't expect to find that much. I had heard of a few, and I thought I'd find a few, but I think I have over 50 Bigfoot encounters in the book.
That's a lot.
It is, far more than I thought I'd find.
What about other reports of strange creatures out there? Not non-Bigfoot related.
Yeah, there's a local entity that the locals call Old Red Eyes. It seems to be a Mothman type entity. I found a Goatman, gargoyle entities, Dogman, and something that my witness reported to be an Anubis-headed creature.
Any werewolf stories?
I did find a local werewolf story. Yeah, it was a girl showed up at a meeting house. It's in the newspaper. The date, they didn't give a date on it, but it's presumed to be from the 1800s. She showed up at a Quaker meeting house and asked the local family if she could stay with them, and they let her stay with them, and she stayed for some months, but she started howling like a wolf in her sleep.
She was the wolf? Wow.
That's what they said. She was howling like a wolf, and then she just disappeared one night. She was gone. It was rainy out, they said, and she would have left footprints, but they didn't find any human footprints, and they found wolf tracks.
Wolf tracks, though. That's weird. I bet those newspapers of that era, Tim, had a field day with stuff like this.
Oh, there's some great stuff if you take the time to dig through it.
Goatman attacks. What's that?
Goatman seems to be, and a lot of people will just classify it with Bigfoot because it's a bipedal hairy thing. But the witnesses report that it has horns and like a goat.
Stands upright, though. It's a man.
Stands upright. And the attacks that I found were from August of 1973 in Lancaster County. And it was three consecutive nights. They happened within 5 miles of each other. It was first sighted by two Amish brothers. They were returning from work in a field. The creature came out and spooked their horses. They ended up getting thrown to the ground. The second night, a man was clearing weeds with the scythe. And this creature was described having fangs like a tiger, claws like a grizzly bear, and horns like a goat. So he was clearing weeds with a scythe. He heard a roar and looked up to see the creature charging at him. He tried to defend himself with a scythe. It ripped it out of his hands, and he took off running. He returned the following day and found only the metal parts of the scythe, the blade and the bolts, and it was presumed that the creature ate the wooden handle out of the scythe.
Now, who would make that up?
Especially the Amish. I mean, they have no reason to be making up stories like this.
No, not the Amish. Not at all.
No, no.
Now, you've got a chapter called the Albatwitches. What are they?
The Albatwitch. These are small, hair-covered, bipedal ape men. They're not, a lot of people say, oh, they're baby Bigfoots, but they're not. They're never seen with adult Bigfoot creatures. And they're reported along the Susquehanna River in Lancaster and York County. I've come to find out they're actually reported all over the United States. They're very rare. By contrast, I have, I think, 3 Albatwitch sightings in the book versus the 50-some Bigfoot sightings. The local lore said the name came from Apple Snitch because they were known to steal apples, but it's actually, I believe it's a German word. Pennsylvania Dutch were actually Pennsylvania German, and Alb is German for elf. Entwischen is a verb that means to escape, and I think it was Albentwischen, and it became Albatwitch locally. And they're supposed to be very aggressive. A lot of Native Americans will tell you if you run into these creatures, you're going to be worse off than if you run into a Bigfoot.
Wow, there's no way out on these things, huh?
Well, my witnesses, the 3 I had were roadside sightings, all of them. So they
seem pretty serious, the witnesses?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Did you see any emotion in them, like they broke down, cried, they were scared to death, anything like that?
One fellow I knew, I met personally, and he was a paranormal investigator himself. And I don't know if he was more prepared for it, if he had come to terms with it over the years. It happened a few years back, but he was very plain spoken about it. The woman, a woman who had it, she just didn't know what to make of it. And she's someone who didn't want her name used. You know, she was happy to tell the story, but she said, you know, please don't use my name.
You did get a lot of reports of UFOs out that way too, didn't you?
Yeah, there were more reports than I could have probably done half the book on UFOs if I did all the reports, but I tried to list the more interesting cases I found.
Were they more than just lights in the sky?
Yeah, I did find, and I was told about it, but I walked into a local antique store, and I was talking to the owners in a little town called Gatchelville. I think it's the only store in the town. And I just said, hey, you know, anything crazy, anything strange happen around here? And they said, do you know about the UFO landing?
Whoa, tell me what? About that one.
Well, I had to do some serious digging. It was from an old MUFON journal. It's listed at various dates, 77 or 78. I think it's probably 1978 because there was a kind of Bigfoot and UFO flap in the county
mm-hmm.
in 1978. But this 11 separate witnesses from multiple locations observed this thing. It was flying against the wind, so it kind of eliminates the possibility of it being a weather balloon. It landed in a field and caused a fire. Inside there was an unburnt area in the shape of a triangle inside the burnt area, with 3 holes at either point of each point of the triangle, rather. And it was tested for radiation, and it came up positive for radiation.
I bet it went through the roof.
The soil was burnt 3 inches down, so it was a really intense heat from the fire.
Any occupants?
None reported.
And what about taking off? Did they see that happen?
I didn't find it in the report. It must have. You know, it wasn't there. And the fire company was called to put the fire out, so it certainly was going by that time.
What about ghost stories?
I have found it's strange. It seems wherever you find one thing, you find another. In other words, when I find Bigfoot reports, I tend to find UFO reports. When I find both of those, I find ghost stories too. I don't know if they're all related. I think they must be in some way, but I haven't figured that out yet. But I did find ghost stories in all the areas of interest in the book.
Which ones were pretty compelling for you, Tim?
My favorite one was called The Singing Corpse.
The Singing Corpse? What was that all about?
This is from the local cemetery that was originally the Seven Gates of Hell were supposed to be, the Prospect Hill Cemetery. And I dug this up from a newspaper from the early 1900s. What it was is people were being scared. It started with a guy who was he was a lamp man, and he was working in the area, and he heard someone singing the old hymn, "Nearer, My God, to Thee." And it was coming from the cemetery. He looked in and he saw this pale white face, a guy in a black suit. And he said it looked over at him and had glowing eyes. And he took off running. Some other local guys heard about this and they thought, well, we're going to go see this. So they went into the cemetery at night. And most of the article is about them sitting there. And they kind of said they lost their train of thought. But sometime after midnight, they heard the singing. They looked over and this man or ghost looked at them, and they said it had glowing red eyes, and it was known to have a beautiful voice. They said it could have sang in any church choir in the area.
But it was dead.
They could never tell if it was dead or not. But it certainly scared a lot of people.
And these stories are all over Pennsylvania, or were they really restricted just to these three counties?
I restricted myself to the three counties just because, it's the area where I live, and I really wanted to do a thorough job.
Of all the stories that you put in the book, what's the one that just is the most mind-boggling for you? The one that you just left shaking your head?
Probably.
I kind of like the asylum story myself.
Yeah, like I said, that's one that certainly has a hook. For me, the thing that I can't really wrap my head around is the relationship between Bigfoot and UFOs. When I had read other books about it. Stan Gordon has written books about UFOs and Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, but he's on the other side of the state.
Yeah, he's been on the show too. Good guy.
Yeah, excellent books. So when I started finding Bigfoot, and then I started finding UFOs, they're in the same place at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know what to make of it. It's really hard to wrap your head around what the connection is.
Did anybody, Tim, ever report stories about like demons or, evil that lurks out there too?
Yeah. There's one cemetery in the area. It's called Hans Graf Cemetery. It's in Lancaster County. It's this little walled cemetery with no, there's no gate. You have to climb over the wall to get into it. It's very, very strange. Probably less than a quarter of acre in size. It's very tiny. It's a family cemetery. But there are so many legends associated with this one cemetery. I was pretty shocked. They talk about shadow people, a vampire, wolfmen, dogmen, spook wolves. We in Pennsylvania, we have so many werewolf stories that we actually have a name for the ghost of a werewolf, which they call spook wolves, all associated with this one little cemetery. And it's supposed to be a pretty dark place.
The scary parts, though, are is that story of the girl who just never showed up again.
Yeah.
Just disappeared.
Yes, no trace of her. It was
I would think people would hear. I mean, she was with a group of people, or was she by herself?
She was by herself. She was dropped off in the area.
Okay.
She wanted to. I believe she had her childhood home was somewhere in the area, and she wanted to see it. I believe, and had someone drop her off, and she just disappeared, and was never heard from. No trace, nothing.
Which kind of makes credence to that burning asylum story, huh?
Or the hide behind. For me, it ties in with that.
Any reports of mutilations, cattle mutilations, or anything in these three counties you looked at?
I didn't find any of those, no.
When you were putting together the book, what was your main focus? What did you really key in on?
I started it just to tell what I hoped would be the true story of Toad Road and kind of dispel some of the rumors about it. And it sort of became two halves. The book, the first half is about that, my sort of journey and how Don't Look Behind You led me to the hide behind it. Kind of when I made that connection, that was pretty wonderful for me in terms of having a story to tell. And then the second half of the book is just a sort of exploring all the sightings I could find in the area.
Timothy, do you think that like these three counties all around the country, they have similar stories?
I think so. I think if someone's willing to do the digging, you'll find it. I think there may be, these things might be associated with certain areas. They tend to, what I've found is they tend to be near running water, creeks, rivers. And I don't know if there's a geological association, but I did find, for instance, Toad Road runs right up to an old iron furnace where they made cannonballs and iron and so forth for the Revolutionary War. And Chickie's Rock, which is the area where the Albatwitches are supposed to be, has seven iron furnace ruins within the area of the park.
Why were these roads that we've been talking about, why were they closed?
Well, Toad Road was washed out from Hurricane Agnes, and it was closed, and they just never reopened it. It was already a pretty rough rural road. It's a shame they never reopened it or just didn't make a hiking trail out of it.
Right. Well, and roads are supposed to lead to something. What
yes.
do these roads lead to?
Well, I think Toad Road originally led to that old iron furnace. And that, again, may be part of how hell got associated with it, with the,
right.
the smoldering iron and the burning flames and so forth. But it led right to it, and that would have been the only thing, the only kind of industry in the area.
It's not like you had houses alongside the road or anything like that.
No.
Interesting take there. And of course, the other roads, same thing, that were closed?
Well, some of the roads, like for instance in Hex Hollow, I think they just stopped maintaining them.
It's just amazing to me that they could just shut a road down. Like, you don't need to get to the other end of it. We're going to come back in a moment, Tim. We're going to take phone calls and stories. One, if you live in York, Lancaster, or Adams counties in Pennsylvania, and you've heard these stories, check in with us. If you've got your own story from wherever you live, share that with us, and then questions for Tim when we come back.